Hello and welcome back to the Master of None podcast. I am your host Stephen Murphy. I'm joined by Sam, one of the regular rugby crew. That's a bit of a tongue twister. Westy, unfortunately, is out again. We'll just air him out. What will we, Sam? He's lost his voice after a rugby trip to Portugal or Spain. Was it Spain or Portugal? He was Portugal. He's not able. Unfortunately, with podcasts, you do need audio from your voice. So he'll be sitting this week out, but he'll be back next week to recap it all. But first of all, of course, we'll check in with Sam. How are you, Sam? You didn't go on the trip. You were sensible.
I was poor, not sensible. I wanted to go on the trip, but between the trips to France for the World Cup and holidays booked with myself and the family, I couldn't afford it. I couldn't justify it. And then now we have a final next week. The lads were trying to rebrand it as warm weather training or something, but I don't believe for a second that that's what it was.
If you do it every year, you know what I mean? What's it's just normal nowadays.
I believe they went to the exact same place that the IRFU go for the warm weather trainings. There was just as intense. So the Orkney Craig final now this week will be full noise from the boys getting back from the warm weather training. No, I didn't go. I had a nice weekend though. Took advantage of the sunshine, went for a walk in Rinvale Park, went down, looked at the boats, checked out Seahorse for a coffee and a cookie down just the back of kind of Galway Bay Golf Club there. Fantastic. Going to be added to the weekly kind of haunts. And then, yeah, Sunday played a bit of golf, which was nice. Got out, played 18 holes. So happy out with the weekend now, and then looking forward to next weekend with the bank holiday weekend coming. It'll be good.
Yeah, Seahorse. Yeah, I'm more of a regular to a Seahorse probably than yourself, obviously. But yeah, I've been this. It's nice. That area down in Renville's lovely. Nice place to get engaged, I hear. That's rumors. Rumor has it. I was back home.
Check the tides.
Yeah, just make sure. Tides apparently are a thing, and apparently they're on a schedule, it turns out. I was back home in Cavan for the weekend. My niece's communion was on, so the first of the communions this year. So it was good. I was home for the weekend and got to spend time. It's the first time I've been home in probably like 6 weeks, so it's been good. Always good to get home, and had a great day for the communion. So, it was good. There was also some rugby. Actually, before we get stuck into the rugby, there was a discussion on Twitter. This is not rugby related, but there's a new Netflix series out called Baby Reindeer. If you haven't heard of it, it's nothing. It's not a kids show, that's for sure. But Sam watched it, loved it, recommended it to myself and Westy, and then we watched it here at home. I did not like it. Now, I suppose it's kind of a reflection on. It's miserable. Will you agree with that, Sam? That it's not a fun time.
No, it's not an enjoyable story, but that's not the point of it.
I'm not saying that's the point of it, but I just don't know why as a society we love to watch that. That's the question I come out of watching that and other shows like Saltburn. I'm like, who? I just don't know. I don't get the purpose of it. But look, that's more of a me issue than anything else.
But you also don't like Marvel movies, which are the complete polar opposite and should be the things that if you don't get Saltburn.
I never say I don't like Marvel movies. I've never really watched them.
Yeah, you don't watch things. That's your problem.
It's like, yeah, I'm just not like, really a movie guy.
Or TV, unless it's like live sport or a half an hour kind of comedy, you're not really too into it. So I'm not.
A good documentary. I enjoy a good. I'm not. It doesn't appeal to me for whatever reason.
Now you're married into World War II. We get it.
Love World War II. Love me, I was going to say love me the Nazis. Don't love the Nazis, but find them endlessly interesting, that's for sure. Maybe that's more of a me. Maybe I'm just an old man, which is probably true.
100% an old man. probably the most said things out of your mouth would be something along the lines of like, I just don't understand, or I just don't get it, which is, that's old man territory.
No, I'm good with like technology.
I'm talking about people's choices. That's,
yeah, I just don't get the enjoyment factor from Baby Reindeer. But look, that's what we're opening up. We're having this discussion to open it up to our listeners. Let us know if you've watched it on Twitter. Let me know that you enjoy that 8 episodes of utter misery. Or were you like me and, you know, felt like you had to give yourself a good shower afterwards, that kind of thing. And we'll see who's right, Sam. You'd probably be on the right side because it's incredibly popular at the moment. I was home at the weekend though, and my mom said, oh, I might watch that. And I was like, I don't know, ma'am. I don't know if this one's for you. Mam likes, you know, EastEnders and Coronation Street. I don't know if this is the kind of show for her, but we'll find out. Sam is also news before we get stuck into the rugby, or at least the games. Piers O'Connor has signed for Connacht, announced today from Bristol. 28-year-old, and he's Irish qualified. We'd heard rumours about this a couple of weeks and months ago. It seems like a great pickup, Sam. You're excited by this news?
Yeah, when I heard the rumours a couple of weeks ago, I said that I was excited for the idea of him replacing Farrell. If Farrell has to go, which we all believe is the case, that Farrell's on his way. I think Jackman went as far as to say that it's a done deal to Munster, and it was signed 2 weeks ago on the RT podcast last week. So you'd want to presume that he's not going to just say something like that without it being confirmed. So if that's the case, which is a big, big loss, I'm a huge Tom Farrell fan, have been since day one with him. I think the only downside to his game is that he hasn't been as available as we'd like. Piers O'Connor, you know, he's had a big injury, but he's been relatively mainstay for Bristol for a few years now, 100 and something odd caps, played once for the Ireland under-19s, played underage for England. Really exciting talent, very, very quick. I think there's more to it than just being a Farrell replacement as a 13. I think the fact that they mentioned in the briefing that he plays a bit of full-back is big as well, because, you know, rumours to be believed, Tiernan's on the way out. He's not been the Tiernan of old for a couple of years now. He's had fits and starts, but I think Santi Cordero was brought in primarily to play full-back. They'll hope to get him on, but they'll also want to manage him. So it's a very smart pickup. I'm excited by it. He's so exciting. He's electric on the ball. He's, you know, really brings players into it, as well as has that turn of pace, has that break that Farrell also has in him. And it's a good, exciting, speedy outside back Connacht signing. You know, like, we can need players in other positions all we want. Everyone prefers an outside back. A speedy outside back signing is really nice.
Yeah, I'm kind of, that's where I'm falling on. Like, it's a nice signing. I'm excited to see him. I'm happy he's coming to Connacht. Is he going to fix a lot of Connacht's problems? No. I don't think that's not what's being promised here either. But, but if he's available and Irish qualified, then why not?
And you've had an issue there with Hawkshaw playing the 13 when needed. You know, Farrell, even though he's been more available this year, hasn't been all mainstay at all. Ralston, we thought was a 13, is playing a lot on the wing. Ford, I don't want to see him at 13. I like him as a 12. Bundy's probably going to be less available again next year. Daly, we presume, is off. It seems to be the case that he's moving on. Someone has said France. Someone has said he's trying to find a contract somewhere. Munster or Ulster would all be good options for him. But there is a few moving out in those positions. The one thing you could say is it getting in the way of Hugh Gavin getting a bit of game time next year? But I don't buy into that. I think Hugh Gavin will get as much game time as he needs, but he also can't be rushed in to be an ever-present in a team at the age he is. You know, no professional caps or no professional performances yet. Just signed his first pro contract. He will need time to bed in. He'll have some great games like Matty Devine, but he'll also have some learning curve games as well. So it's an experienced head with a lot of pace, a lot of energy, very exciting, and probably more on brand for a 13, for what we want out of a 13, than Hawkshaw has been. You know, I'm a Hawkshaw fan. You're not as much, but at 13. But I think that we do probably need a number there with the amount they're going, and then kind of the square pegs, round holes that have been happening.
Yeah, just clear, I am a Hawkshaw fan, just as you said, not a 13. He's just not big enough, in my opinion, to play 13, especially. It depends on the club, obviously, you're playing, but nowadays, I just don't think he is. Yeah, I as you said, as a Tom Farrell replacement, if that's the case, then happy days. If he's 90% as good as Tom Farrell is, then I'll take that in a heartbeat. Tom Farrell, I think, is that good. So, disappointed to see Tom Farrell go, but I'm happy to be getting this guy, but we'll see. Hopefully not the end of the signings for Connacht when the off-season comes. But right, let's get stuck into some rugby results. We'll start with the aforementioned Connacht. Connacht headed away to Dragons, to Newport in Wales. Not a great historical hunting ground, but they come out with the bonus point win, 34 points to 27 in the end. Five tries scored: Seamus Harry-Langton, Finlay Beelam, John Porch, Dave Heffernan, and then Tierney Martin in the 70th minute. A red card also for the Dragons in the 69th minute for Carter. Obvious red card. I think anyone watching it, apart from that one Dragons fan who responded to my tweet, he wasn't convinced it was a red card. But look, as I responded him, you're more than entitled to your opinion. Yeah, look at Sam. We'll get stuck into the performance in a second, but bonus point win away to Dragons this time of year when it's badly needed. That's a huge plus.
Massive plus. The Dragons historically not easy place to go for Connacht, and this season, regardless of where they are in the table, not the easiest of places to go. Bulls and Leinster are the only teams that have put scores up against them. There, that's the third bonus point win of the season in Rodney Parade for an away team. So it is a great result. It was badly needed. It was on the cards, the importance of being placed on it by not just the fans, but also the coaching ticket, because I don't believe you would have seen Aki and Farrell together. I think that they would have backed forward to start at 12 and to win the game. You know, they would have had every bit of confidence winning that game there, but they started with Aki and Farrell because they knew that this was the two, you know, the 10 points from Zebre, Zebre and Dragons were vitally important if you wanted to try and get anything from the last three. Munster away is a hard game, but you know, they've had a tough old trip to South Africa. They'll have a week off, which is annoying from a Connacht point of view because you'd like to try and get them on the hop. But it's a really hard three game run in at the end there. You want to try and steal a win against maybe Stormers, pick up some points where you can. The other games, you know, Munster away, is doable, but the coaches definitely placed a lot of emphasis on this game and started with as strong a team as was probably available to them. They went 6-2. They really wanted to lay down the marker, and it looked like that was going to be the case for 20 minutes. And then, as has been quite evident all season, it didn't go as swimmingly as it could have. You know, we started really well, thought, okay, this is the day, we just put up a score, we just continue on where we left off. But true Connacht fashion, we kind of let them into the game. We didn't just wipe away the sweat off the brow after a poor enough refereeing decision. Penalty that probably wasn't a penalty, but other teams just react to that and get past it. We didn't, and we let them in and made more of a game of it than it needed to be.
Yeah, I think that's started brilliantly and then a kind of a pretty poor defensive read, I think, was from JJ in the middle. And again, Connacht just never really seemed to, you know, they put that first nail in the coffin, they never really seemed to hammer home the second one straight away. And it's really frustrating because, like, a lot of these games that Connacht have won by, like, single score, you know, in another universe, they win by 20. Do you know what I mean? Because they're putting up the scores, it's just they're also conceding some really poor tries. And that one right before halftime, yeah, it was very frustrating because Connacht had played all the rugby in that first half. Like, the possession numbers, I think, were in the 70% range. And just an easy kind of score off the back of a maul where it's, you know, a 2-on-1 and it's, you know, it's again, going into halftime, I can't remember what the actual score was at halftime. It was, I don't know. It was
12 or something, was it?
Yeah, it was only like a 4 or 5 point or even less possibly lead. And again, Dragons would have been, you know, licking their lips at that, having played no rugby really at all. And that's the frustrating part. But again, there's a load of good, and we were saying that in our WhatsApp group, like, there's so much positives here. Some of the play was really nice. Getting in the 22 rather easily, and then that kind of stalled in. That's kind of been a theme of the season too. But a lot of good stuff there, and then just some kind of bad, sloppy mistakes where, like, every team makes mistakes, Sam, but, like, I feel like no team gets punished nearly as much for their mistakes like Connacht do. And that's obviously Connacht's fault rather than, you know, just bad luck. But I feel like, you know, mistakes are punished by other teams. A couple of, like, Bundy, that's probably one of his worst displays in a long time for Connacht. Just didn't seem at the races at all. As you said, maybe it's just fatigue at this stage. You know, still, we're kind of debating whether you take him off in the second half, bring on Ford earlier than what they kind of brought it on from JJ anyway. But I suppose him just being out there, it's occupying a lot of the Dragons' kind of mindset, and the fact he's still out there defensively, he's still putting in big hits. But by his standards, obviously not the game he wanted. But I think, you know, I find ourselves repeating ourselves, Sam, on this podcast about the sloppy mistakes. That's not going to clear up over the next three games, I wouldn't imagine. I think that's going to be during the summer, you try and either add the personnel to fix those problems, or at least you try and get to the root of the problem and fix it. I don't see us becoming this clean, clinical side overnight for the next three games.
No, not systemically, but I think that Connacht have shown in the past that they're able to up their game for Munster and Leinster. Stormers at home are supposedly going to travel very strong. It'll be a tough game, tougher than I probably anticipated because they're in the hunt as well. But Munster away, Leinster away are two games where Connacht have historically been able to up it that little bit and just get whatever sort of passion it is allows them to kind of things to come off. Whether or not we see Bundy next week, I don't know, because he's played a lot of games in a row now, and I don't think that, you know, with the IRFU kind of stand down periods, I'm not sure how much managing of his time they want to be. You wouldn't want to get to a position where you play him out of time and then you get to the quarterfinals and he's not available because you have to give him the stand down period. So it's an interesting one to see what they do there. But there are sloppy mistakes. There are sheepish mental decisions inside the 22 where, like you said, they get into the 22 and then it doesn't look like they have an answer. They try to barrel over, but they're kind of taking it static. They don't look to use the ball very well. And when they do, it works. You know, Porch's try isn't exactly a perfect example of that. We get over and he's in acres of space, but we try our hardest. We kind of play really nice rugby and get into the 22 and then try to bash over. And I don't think any of those things systemically are going to change in the next three games. So I don't think we should look for them. I think you try your hardest to get a result by hook or by crook and get into the knockouts, potentially into Europe, so long as the Sharks or Benetton don't win the Champions or the Challenge Cup. And you reassess over the summer. By accounts, Mark Sexton is quite methodical in his input and the way that he likes to structure play. And it takes a time for that to come to the fore. So I'm kind of fingers crossed hoping that that's the case and that we see more of it develop over the summer when they have more opportunity to work with the players that are there, more of an idea of who's going to be there in the long run and maybe kind of putting their own personal stamp on the squad. You know, it'll be the second summer. The first summer without the rebuild of the coaching staff. So they'll be able to kind of recruit and pick who they'd like. So I'm hoping that that's the case for next season. But like you said, just get through to the end of the season with by whatever means possible. I don't think you're going to systemically change anything now over the last three games. So we've been scraping the wins that we've gotten by a score or two and just look to do that. You know, if you can steal something in Munster, you can get a result against Stormers. Like, that would be huge. And to get into the playoffs, and then it's just playoffs, and you just treat every game as it comes. You know, you probably for all the good it'll do is get an eight, end up probably away to Leinster or something. So it wouldn't be the most pleasant of experiences, but it's frustrating to watch because, you know, players like Bundy making the mistakes that he was making, I think, stem from a kind of Roy the Rovers mentality where he's almost like, you know, he's been talismanic for Connacht and for Ireland for so long now. That he feels like, look, I can do this, I can step up. And he puts a bit too much weight in his own shoulders and it just manifests itself wrongly. And I think you saw that with the drop kickoff and the drop pass and down the touchline. They're mistakes Bundy doesn't normally make, regardless of how well he's playing or not. But with the 6-2 split, you can't change him because you need to keep forward for, like, what happened to JJ. You need to keep that in the back pocket. And you also, Bundy's on the pitch, even if he's not playing well, he still occupies mind. He occupies people's conscience and he occupies space. And those are irreplaceable. If you bring on someone that's not as detrimental, they won't mark him and it'll be harder to break down. We got over the line and that's what we'll probably need to do again once, if not twice, this season.
I was watching at home with my dad and he's not into rugby really. He kind of he understands it and all that, but he wouldn't watch it. But he's watching with me and I think Connacht went 12 up with 20 minutes to go. And he goes, oh, you didn't get too excited there. And I was like, oh, there's a long time left to go in this game. We're not even close to being comfortable here. Also, if anyone's keeping track, I don't know if someone is keeping track of points difference when Connacht are up a man. That yellow card period, we were -4. 4 points down, I think, in the end for that yellow card. But, just, again, don't seem to be able to manage that man advantage. But I suppose, look, we spoke about it for the negatives. I think we should highlight again Matthew Devine. Another start in the 9 jersey. His second professional start ever. And, again, he looked super sharp, Sam. And, again, maybe it's just the youth. Maybe it's naivety. But he is all guns blazing. The pace is high, which I love. And he seems to be hitting the professional ranks, hitting it running. It looks to be a serious, serious prospect.
Yeah, and that was always going to be the case. I think from under 20s, from talking to other players, he had huge prospects. His ceiling is so, so high. And he's kind of showing that now that he deserved his chance. Other provinces, you know, Leinster get a chance to blood their youngsters a bit earlier because of how dominant they are and how kind of strong their depth and their squad are. But if you had thrown Matty Devine in a bit earlier in the season, it could have backfired completely and he mightn't have gotten the opportunity to showcase his abilities the way he has. I'm very impressed with the speed in which he plays, with the speed of thought that he plays. He's very mature by the looks of it for his age, and his delivery is excellent. He brought a life to the team in the last two games that I think was missing for a couple of games. And that's no slight on Blade, but he played a lot of rugby this year. And you saw Blade covering a kick towards the end. He's still experienced. He's still probably the number one man and will be going into next season. He's been immense for Connacht in the past, but I think Devine just added a little new lease of life that probably a rocket kick up the arse that we needed just as a team, just to someone to grab us by the scruff of the neck and pull us on. So delighted for him, delighted as a Connacht fan to have a player like that signed. He's been impressive. I would just like to just preempt, he's only a young lad. There will be a poor game or two. Don't write him off straight away. And that's because fan bases can do that. They can be fickle. Players can come on, they can be the best player ever, and then they can have three or four, they can have a slump, they could have a 6 months and just doesn't go to plan. It's not a case you just throw him out straight away if that does happen. He will need time to develop. Players will be sporadic in what they can do. But so far, all the signs are that he's an excellent player and that he will be a brilliant player for us in the long run. You said it in the WhatsApp. It's a one part of his game, not that I have an issue with, but that I feel like it could become an issue if it goes too far, is the sniping. He's brilliant at sniping. He has done it effectively so far in the two games against weaker opposition. If it keeps being effective, that's great, but he has to be mature enough to know when is the right time to snipe. I think you see the difference between Gibson Park and Casey is I think Gibson Park always snipes at the right time. He snipes a lot, but it's never isolating. It's never the wrong time. Whereas I feel from the outside looking in, Casey snipes too often, gets himself isolated too much, and that's the hot and cold of it. You want that in a scrum half. You want that speed of thought. You want the determination to go themselves, but you need the maturity to know when is the right time to do it. And I hope that he doesn't develop into the type of player that just snipes all the time. And I don't think he will, but it's the one thing you said. He just hopefully he doesn't kind of keep doing it because of how effective it was against Zebre and Dragons, because it'll be a complete other story if you start doing it against Munster next week or Leinster on the last day, because they will have a game plan for it and they will be able to eat it up.
Exactly. Yeah. Look, as you perfectly said it there, he's young. He will make bad decisions. He will make bad plays because he's so young. But that's part of the learning experience. And yeah, we just have to be patient with that. But yeah, incredible talent. Quick look at the table, Sam. Connacht are up to sixth after that win, which is a great jump up from over ninth, I think. But that doesn't necessarily paint the full picture. We're still 1 point ahead of ninth. So it's super tight. Stormers are in fifth on 45 points. Then Connacht, Ulster, and Benetton are all on 44 points. We go ahead on the points difference, and then Edinburgh are in ninth on 43 points. So 2 points covering those 5 to 9 slots. But look, we're in with a chance over the last three games. It's a murderer's row for those last three games, which is unfortunate. But look at. You got to beat these teams if you want to be in top eight, or at least be getting points from these games. And Connacht have to be looking for points in these last three games. They need them, otherwise top eight isn't going to happen. They also tweeted today, Sam. It'll be their I can't remember many seasons in a row now where with at least 50% win record with the win last weekend. They're guaranteed that at least they'll be 9-9 if that happens. But I think that's it's good to highlight that. It's good to kind of bring us back to earth sometimes. I think though, like, you have to be looking now again, progressing on from that, and that shouldn't be just good enough anymore. I think that they've done it for a couple of seasons now, which is fantastic, and that is a real stepping stone from the Andy Friend era, and Pete Wilkins is continuing that, which is brilliant. But they need to be up on that again if they want to continue to progress to be one of the top six teams every year, and then hopefully one of the top five and four teams if that's the plan, which I'm sure it is. But again, good reminder that it's we can get sometimes ahead of ourselves and be expecting sometimes too much. But winning more games than you lose every year, hopefully that happens. But if that's the case, it's still pretty decent for considering everything around Connacht rugby.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent minimum requirement for a season for a team. If you're setting out your goals at the start of the season, you say, look, 50% or better win rate. That's a phenomenal return in a tight league like this. You see everywhere between, fifth and 11th, there's nothing in it. This 1.5 wins, 6 points between them. It's a congested middle area there. If you get 50% of your wins, it's meaning you're beating, half the team, really, half the teams in the league on average, which means you're likely to finish ahead of most of that group. It's a good place to put yourself. Highlighting it, I think, from Connacht's part was smart because there is a bit of doom and gloom around the season. Even though our run isn't that bad, it's our performances that haven't been up to scratch the last couple of weeks. We're actually getting wins. Throughout Six Nations, we got two wins, even though they were ugly. We just had a win there. Benetton away was one that may live in the minds as a regret. You have the Edinburgh and the Leinster games. One of those had gone the right way. The Leinster or the Benetton one, the Edinburgh one would have been a draw. But if one of those had gone the right way, like that season, that win to loss ratio, 10 to 5, it would be, is it? Or 10 to, yeah, 10 to 5, it would be an excellent ratio. And we're very close to that. So I think Connacht were smart to highlight it. Even in Pat Lam, was it once, maybe twice in his tenure that they got winning records? And one of those was the year they won it. And Friendly had just solidified Connacht as a very steady 6 to 9 sort of team. And that's where you want to be. You can jump from there. It's very hard to jump from 15th, 16th up to 5th or 6th. But to jump from 6th to 3rd is not that bad. Like you saw Munster only a couple of weeks ago, people were doom and gloom in it. They were fighting with us for 8th. It was like, which one of the provinces won't make it? Will it be Ulster? Will it be Connacht? Will it be Munster? Munster have an opportunity now to finish 1st or 2nd in the table and to get themselves a home quarter, semi, and final if they do. That's a 2 or 3 game run that has gotten them to that point. That's how close fought this league is. So to get 50% is an excellent minimum requirement for a season.
Yeah, and there should be no lack of motivation going into these games from Connacht. Like, there should be no flat performances, I should say that, going into these three games. They should be all, do or die games, which they pretty much are. But yeah, look, a win's a win. We'll move on. Ulster Rugby also played. They were played at home to Benetton. They come away with a bonus point win of their own, 38 points to 34. Similar position, obviously, to Connacht. They're in one position below us in seventh. Every game now for them also huge, huge ramifications. Sam, by all accounts, again, Ulster, you can nearly paint Ulster and Connacht these days with the same brush, but not the best performance. But look, a win's a win, a huge win necessary. Benetton, no slouches. They come away with two losing bonus points, which is huge for their campaign as well. But for Ulster's point of view, they're trying to get to the playoffs, similar to Connacht, get to the off season and build with a new coach as well. But a win at the weekend there was huge.
Massive result. Strange one from Connacht point of view. Benetton getting the two losing bonus points could bite us in the ass. Could bite Ulster in the ass as well. And they'll only have themselves to blame for it if that is the case, because at the start of the game, it looked like Ulster weren't up to much. It was an extremely scrappy game. Neither team was playing particularly well, but Benetton played a bit more of the rugby. After about 20, 25 minutes, Ulster grew into it, and I thought that they were kind of dominant and in control then. Played better rugby, started to use the ball a lot smarter, started to kind of impose themselves on the game. Some players had really, really strong games. I think McCluskey and Stockdale, Crutters, just looked like they had that bit between the teeth. They looked like they wanted to do it themselves. Addison had a strong game at 13 as well. And Balakoon, was more himself, more of the Balakoon that we want to see. So they started to impose themselves in the game, but some absolutely shocking errors led to two easy out Benetton tries, which allowed them to stay in the game, stay in the fight, and get those two losing bonus points that Ulster could curse, but I think Connacht might curse more if it's the case, because we lost to Benetton a couple of weeks ago. So a strange old game from Ulster, but I think, like you said, and like we said about Connacht, just get through to the end of the season by hook or by crook and reassess from there. Rumors on the internet this week is that it might not be Richie Murphy in the driving seat for next year. Is it Ludecky was kind of linked with the job or potentially coming in as director of rugby? Some people hypothesizing that Richie Murphy wants to go with the 20s. Next year, and this was the interim period. It's up in the air from an Ulster point of view. Ulster would do well to maybe come out and make a statement, because I know the Ulster fans have not been happy with the lack of kind of open dialogue between the club and the fans in the last number of years. And it's an easy win. It's low hanging fruit if they come out and just state what's happening. You know, even if it's nothing, even if they come out and state Richie Murphy is an interim coach, whether or not he's the head coach next year is still undecided. This is why. If they came out and said that, I think that the Ulster fans would just be a bit more content and then also more forgiving about the performances and the potential to not make the top eight. You know, if you know where you stand. But right now they're in a sort of weird limbo where Murphy is getting a couple of results, had some hard games, but everyone kind of saying he's an interim coach. So if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. It's a strange one to be in. It was reflected in the game. I thought the players looked like they were playing a bit more for themselves and for the coach and for the jersey than they have done in the last number of weeks, or not the last number of weeks, in Dan McFarland's last few weeks, but it's still not a polished performance by any matter.
Yeah, the Richie, it's interesting, like, you know, what is, it's probably easy for him to go back to the under-20s and, like, you've got a serious group of talent players, you're very, you know, successful, the habit of winning is there, whereas Ulster are a bit of a, you don't know what you're going to get, maybe he's not liked what he's seen from being there even for the few weeks and months. It would probably have to take a lot for him to take on that Ulster job full time. I think Ulster fans would happily take him. I think from what they've seen even so far, he's turned around a little bit, and there isn't obviously the negative kind of feeling around the club too. But yeah, I don't know. It's tough. Like they're in the exact same position as us. Top eight is still very much on, and not finishing the top eight is equally not as on. I think they need a big kind of off season similar to Connacht. They're more likely to have a big off season than Connacht, just with funding and you know potential wages. But yeah, we'll have to keep tracking that. But look, I win and Benetton, fair play to them for getting those two bonus losing bonus points because that keeps them in the top eight hunt as well, which is huge. So fair play to them. We've already mentioned Munster. Let's talk about their. It has to be said, an incredible 2 week stint down in South Africa. A huge win last week, and they follow it up with a good old trouncing of the Emirates Lions, 33-13. They come away with the bonus point win, back to back bonus point wins. I think what was it last week? Bonus point win too. I think it was, wasn't it? So 10 points from two games away in South Africa. Like Sam, we hate to say it, Munster look like they're again hitting their prime at the right time of the season. You know, you can look into however way you want it. Two away wins to two decent teams down in South Africa. That's a statement and a half.
Yeah, and I thought when the four South African teams were announced that there was something said, maybe it was unofficially said, that you wouldn't have to play two games in the Highveld on your trip. It would be one at altitude and one at kind of less altitude, sea level, if it's sharks. And I don't know if stormers are at sea level. My geography's not great, but it's definitely not the same altitude. But they played the two at altitude, which is phenomenal going for that group of players. So to play and get the results that way is just another experience that that Munster team can draw on when it comes to a hard game. I think last year they did it a couple of times, you know, the South Africa game, or the South Africa A game, sorry, and then going through the knockouts, getting past Leinster in the semis, and then, you know, nothing looks as difficult then when you get to, you have an away for the final. So they just build experiences that they can draw on when the going gets tough, and that makes them a very hard team to beat. From a rugby DNA level, they're always a tough team to play against, especially in Munster. It's never been easy for anyone, and now they're playing well as being hard to beat. It's very hard to look elsewhere if you see the run that they're on, kind of going towards the playoffs, fighting for the potential home draws as well, which could be huge for them. You know, imagine a final in Parkigweave or wherever it would be if they got it. I hope they wouldn't put it in Lansdowne. It would be amazing to see them doing it in Parkigweave. He says through gritted teeth. But it's great to watch because they are playing really good rugby. It's also really good for the league for the aways in Bulls and Lions to not be guaranteed losses, you know, to get results as an away team. I think the last couple of weeks has happened a bit more, and that's brilliant for the layout of the league because it means the South African teams can't rely on it, which means they'll have to travel, which is it all adds to a better league experience for everyone. So that's another good byproduct of this. But yeah, I think Munster, they're looking very good. And I think it's a good lesson for fans of other teams. Connacht in particular, I want to say this is, after three losses midway through the season, the season's not over. And there's doom and gloom around it. Like last year at the start of the season, it was four or five games in a row. Connacht had poor results. This year we had a few good results and a few bad results. And it's instantly like writing off the whole rest of the season, saying Pete Wilkins isn't the right coach. And it was the same with Rountree. Even at points in the last number of weeks, it was the same with Rountree. It was like, oh, they're rudderless. They have no aim, they've no goal, and kind of you're looking at it going, these are the league champions that are not playing well, but they also have about 45 injuries out of a squad of 53 or whatever they have. So, you have to give them a bit of leeway. And then as soon as they get players back, they show that two or three games in a row with a bonus point win, you put yourself right back in the mix. That's how tight the league is. So I think it's a good lesson for us all to kind of look at them and to say, like, leagues are leagues for a reason. They're not undefeated runs of games the way Leinster have done in the past. There's ups and downs, there's purple patches, and there's all these things, and they look like they're getting a purple patch at just the right time, which for me as a bitter Connacht fan is really hard to take. But I'm delighted for the one or two nice Munster fans I know who are enjoying their experiences right now. But there's some good players there. Like, I think Daly has just been going from strength to strength. Nash, I like Sean O'Brien a lot, and he was playing in centre there, and I think he'll have a more prominent role next year if the Frisch rumours are to be believed. Then good to see Ordies Nyman getting that little run of health as well. There's a lot of good news stories in amongst that kind of last couple of weeks from Munster.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said there. You need to give a coach at least 2 years, realistically. And then if you don't see any improvements then fair enough, you can maybe have the conversation. But like, again, it took Andy Farrell 2 years to get going with Ireland. Like, it just takes time to implement stuff and get teams, especially when, you have new players coming in every season, some players leaving. It's tough. But Munster now are seeing the benefits of that. Their third now is 53 points, only 1 point behind Leinster. Glasgow currently on top by 5 points over Munster in third. But yeah, like, no team is going to want to see Munster, especially at home. They are going to be petrifying because they're never out of a game. You have to almost cut their head off twice to fully kill them. They seem to just make big play. Like, even the Lions there, when they sniffed a comeback in the game around 60 something minutes, and Munster hold them up. It's just like, no team seems to do that more repeatedly and more regularly than Munster. I don't know what it is about them. They just have those kind of cornerstone of players, the likes of Tyburn, Peter Mahoney, that can go to the well over and over again and produce these big games. And then the likes of a Hodnett or a Kendallen come in, and they're the youth version of that. But the same mindset and the same attitude, and it's just like not fair, how these players, how good they are. And I said they're hitting the top peak just like they did last year. They'll be one of the favorites going into the playoffs, whether they're first, second, or third. I don't really care. As they proved last year, it doesn't really matter what position they're in the title or in the league. I'm hopeful, obviously, of kind of going down there, but I'm not expectant. Of too much, just because of how the teams are playing performance wise, it's chalk and cheese really at this stage. But you never know. I said, like, stranger things have happened. Weird performances, Sam. Let's get into Leinster. Leinster have lost two games back to back. They've done the opposite of what Munster have done. They've two losses in a row in South Africa. They lost to the Stormers, which is no issues with that. But they lost 42-12. A big win for Stormers and two losses in a row for Leinster. Sam, I kind of wanted to pick your brain on this. What do you think is the thinking behind these kind of results? Because, like, look, I said they're not naming complete, youth teams here. There's still some good players on display here, and both teams named that are capable of winning, but Cullen's still naming teams that he knows could have lost two games in a row. Are they just not? They don't care too much anymore about whether they finish first, second, or third. Even at the end of the day, they back themselves. They're probably still the best team in the league. on the right day. They're still balancing Champions Cup. But it's unusual to see this happening, right?
It's unusual historically. They've been able to play third string teams throughout the league for a long time. And it's been more than enough to get them into the playoffs and usually in first and get the home draw the whole way through. But that's not the case anymore. Going to South Africa is not as easy. Other teams have upped their game. They wanted the introduction of the South Africa teams to prepare them for Europe, was the understood reasoning for Leinster being enthralled with this introduction of the South African teams into the league. And I think that it's made it a much more difficult proposition. It's made it a much more difficult league. It's not as easy to just waltz through it with your young lads. Like you say, they picked a team of not nobodies. Yeah, they have Jason Jenkins. Ruddock, it's been a long time since he's been involved in the first team. He's a phenomenal player and has been for Leinster, but it's a long while since he was a mainstay in anything. Scott Penny has a big future. Matt Steegan probably should have had a big future. All of these things.
Good man, Scott Penny. What a career. What a career.
Yeah, like they're phenomenal players and they'll do very well, but they're not going to enjoy being part of this second team if it's not as dominant as it has been in the last number of years. And it's good for the league that it's not. You know, they need a Furlong. They need a Porter. They need, you know, a Ross Byrne, even if they can have them. Any of these Irish lads, you know, Henshaw, Ringrose, they should be involved and they need those to win these games. They might not need all of them, but they'll need three or four of them in a rotation, whereas they haven't needed that in the past. And that is good for the league. It's one of the downfalls to the league in the last number of years has been that has been the case and that we've tried to justify results against Leinster, and then Leinster fans have rightfully been able to turn around and say, well, that wasn't our first team. It's going, yeah, well, we can't play your first team because that's the league. So it's good from a league point of view. Their thinking behind doing it, whether they just believe that they have the strong enough team that regardless of where they come, they could come eighth and they'd fancy the away draw the whole way there. Maybe that's the case. Or do they just care about Europe more? And if they care about Europe more, that's great. But that's putting all your eggs in one basket. Are they obsessed with it because they printed a bunch of jerseys with an extra star on them last year and they need to get rid of them? I don't know. But it doesn't look great for the league if that's the case. I love the league. As a Leinster fan, maybe you wouldn't. Maybe you don't care about it because it's not as competitive as Europe. But I think it's showing that it's a brilliant league, especially with the battle for top four and the battle between the kind of 5th to 11th. It's showing that it's an exciting league and it's worth winning. And it will only grow from strength to strength if teams invest in it. So hopefully that this sort of showing from some teams won't happen in the next number of years. At the moment, it's one of two things. They either care about Europe more, which is probably the thing that's happened. I think that's especially getting past La Rochelle, they definitely eye up the road there in Europe, thinking that they have an extremely good chance to finally get that 5th star. That's the most likely scenario. The second most likely scenario is that they just feel wherever they came in the top four, they'll still have the strength in depth and strength in their player ability to get through any playoffs, regardless of their home or away or who they're to. Munster showed that that's not the case last year and that could happen again this year, but I don't think they'll be overly disappointed if they get the European result regardless of what happens in the league, which from a URC fan point of view is disappointing. Maybe with the strength of these teams, with the strength of Munster emerging, with Glasgow playing as good as they are and with the excitement of the league, maybe that mindset towards the league changes in the next couple of years. The best way to change the mindset towards it would be pump a bunch of money into a prize money. Like, teams will want to win it. If the IRFU see that there's a couple of million quid going to the winner, they'll make Leinster fucking play their best team every day.
Yeah, it's. I do want to apologise to Keno, friend of the pod, because last week he said that we're giving out that Leinster are always boring, and then the one week they're not boring, we didn't really talk about. So yeah, credit to Leinster for not being boring for the last 2 weeks. You owed us a couple of those performances. But yeah, I think I think they're totally focusing on, I think once they got past La Rochelle, that was them deciding that, okay, this is our year to win it, because I think they'll get past Northampton easy enough, and then your Toulouse, I think, should win the other semi-final, and then you might have to beat Toulouse. But again, La Rochelle were the total kryptonite for that team in a way that I don't think Toulouse are. I think that's why they're all guns blazing for this. If they win the league, great, but they could still go out and win both, and we're going to be sitting here like, oh, didn't matter. But it just again highlights, and I think you made a really good point there, though. If players like Scott Penny or players like Max Deegan or whoever, if they're not starting and then they're on these teams that are getting Haydens down in South Africa, yeah, then hey, let's go to Ulster, let's go to a Connacht. Why am I going to sit here and not get playing, and only be fed to lambs to the slaughter, and obviously a load of money too. But interesting. Again, interesting to see that. Like I said, Leicester could go in the double. Who knows? Or they might lose both, and I mean that would be hilarious.
That would be the best thing. I'm just...
Again, no offence to the Lens. We get on pretty well with the Lens supporters. No offence, right. But it would be hilarious.
Toulouse playing Queens in the other semi-final. Now, I don't think it'll happen. I think Toulouse will hockey Queens. But if the final's in Tottenham Stadium, isn't it? Which is London. So if Queens get to it, it might be a big emotional London homecoming chance. You know, if that could happen. I'm clutching at straws here. I think the Leinster will walk it, to be honest. I think they'll win both games. But if it's Toulouse, it might be a little closer, but I think they'll beat Northampton by more than 40 points. Do we need to wait till after the watershed to talk about, was it Gallant's dummy for the try at the end? Because that was the second.
I suppose if you're listening with kids, maybe cover their ears. As we're recording this, it's not past the watershed. But if you're listening to this after the watershed, then that's fine. But yeah, it was filth. It's one of those moves where I don't see why more people don't try it. Because it seems simple to do, but then obviously it's incredibly difficult, and he did it so smoothly as well. It was pornography, really, let's be honest.
Yeah, when you go and you're doing training on a cold December night and the thirds pitch in the back of Corinthians, and you're doing like just simple switch drills, and they're always kind of these really robotic, methodic kind of turn your back and pop it off, and the guy runs, and then you see that dummy switch that just looks like something out of The Incredibles, like Mr. Elastic or Mrs. Elastic or whatever she's called, just kind of pull it back, sell it to the two boys like nobody sold anything to anyone before. It was filthy, filthy stuff. And you best believe I'm going to be out in the back garden trying it and practicing it before the final next Sunday.
If I go to your final and you please try that, I will. Because if it comes off, it's a win-win for you, and if it doesn't, I'll laugh my ass off. So
if it doesn't, it's exactly what happened to Will Addison for the Benetton try. They got them back into the game. Will Addison just left it there. I saw what he was doing. He saw what he was doing. Everyone else saw what he was doing. It just didn't happen. And it was almost the exact same thing, but he just left the ball there by accident. If he had elastic girled it back into his hand and ran on with it, it would have been phenomenal, but it wasn't.
Yeah, and I suppose before we finish, we should say best of luck to the Corinthians third team next week. Who he's playing? Oh, it's Wigan, isn't it?
Wigan's for about the fifth time this season.
Local derby, so yeah. Best of luck. We will be all supporting you. I'll try and get there in person, and then we'll hopefully recap a victorious Ardna Craig win as well. But Sam, we'll wrap it up there. Appreciate you coming on as always. We'll be back next week for some European rugby. Connacht are off this weekend. Funny enough, actually only Leinster are the only Irish team still in it, so a lot of provinces off, but we'll recap all the European rugby, and obviously we'll probably do a half an hour on the Ardna Craig and Sam's potentially last game of rugby ever.
It's my last game of rugby ever. My back
is. You said that last year too. We're not getting into it. Sam, appreciate you coming on. We'll catch you next week.
Night, night.